Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideu. Coming up, South Sudan's government rejects the threat of more sanctions by the United Nations.
Sanctions are not helpful at this stage because we are on the track to bring the peace to the country. And the faces that I have gone show the commitment of the people.
Cautious optimism in the Democratic Republic of Congo as this Ebola patient was discharged after taking an experimental Ebola vaccine.
If really it could be proven that this is effective on a large scale, we would be in our way toward controlling one epidemic that can do a lot of harm to humanity.
These stories plus hasta la vista. Spanish Prime Minister is sent packing after a parliamentary vote of no confidence. Stay tuned for all these and your reactions on Facebook right after this global news roundup.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. Italian President Sergio Mattarella swore in Giuseppe Conte as Prime Minister on Friday, ending weeks of political deadlock and avoiding snap elections. Conte will head a coalition government from the anti-establishment Five Star Movement Party and the far-right League Party. Conte said his government would get to work right away.
Lavoreremo intensamente.
We will work intensely to realize our political objectives, which we have already put together in our government contract. We will work with determination to improve the quality of life of all Italians.
His revised populist cabinet is to face a vote of confidence next week in both houses of parliament. Experts suggest his newly formed government would easily win. In Spain, Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy on Friday lost a vote of no confidence in parliament over a long-running corruption scandal that saw his popular party allegedly benefit from illegal funds. The motion was passed with 180 votes in favor and 169 against. The former minister conceded defeat ahead of the vote and congratulated new Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez, who is expected to take office by Monday. Sanchez, leader of the Socialist Party, said he would help get Spain back on track.
Today is a good day for everyone here, even for those who didn't vote for the Socialist Party or other progressive parties. These voters believe in democracy, and they show that today. This House has done great by democracy, by putting an end to the government of Spain.
The European Union has challenged the United States and China for its role in the so-called global trade war. The bloc is challenging China's intellectual property laws and U.S. President Donald Trump's tariffs on steel and aluminum imports from the EU, Mexico, and Canada. EU Trade Commissioner Cecilia Malmström told reporters that both countries would be reported to the World Trade Organization. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Several zoo animals were reportedly lost due to flooding in Germany's western state of Rhineland-Palatinate. Eifel zookeepers allegedly lost track of two lions, two tigers, a bear, and a jaguar. The bear, however, was the only animal to leave its enclosure and was shot and killed after being discovered on a public path. Also in Germany, Bavaria's controversial cross rule has gone into effect. Bavaria's conservative state premier, Markus Söder, initiated the measure in April, requiring Christian crosses to be hung at entrances in public buildings in the southern German state. Critics accuse him of politicizing a religious symbol ahead of state elections in October. And finally, the endangered mountain gorilla population has recovered to over 1,000 plus, despite constant threats by wildlife poachers and armed groups in the western Rift Valley of the Democratic Republic of Congo, Uganda, and Rwanda. Wildlife authorities said the number far exceeded expectations. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. As always, you can listen to Africa Link live on DW Africa Facebook page and comment on the stories we are airing. We shall read some of your thoughts whenever possible, and also would like to welcome those following us live, like Chinyere Ezefi, who says he's listening live from Lagos, Nigeria. Many thanks. We begin the program in South Sudan, where the government has strongly rejected a UN Security Council vote, which threatens more sanctions on the war-ravaged nation. The Security Council has given South Sudan's warring parties 30 days to reach a peace agreement or face possible sanctions.
As Waki Simon Wood reports from Juba, while the government has condemned the UN move, activists and residents have welcomed the possibility of more sanctions after the latest round of mediation in Addis Ababa failed yet again.
Following the passing of the UN Security Council vote which threatens more sanctions on South Sudan, the government of President Salva Kiir, through the Ministry of Foreign Affairs spokesperson Mawen Makol, rejected the move by the UN, saying it can't resolve the country's conflict.
The government is saying the sanctions are not helpful at this stage because we are on the track to bring the peace to the country, and the phases that I have gone with the revitalization shows the commitment of the people, the stakeholders to the peace.
But some of the stakeholders of peace that McCall is referring to have welcomed the possibility of exerting more pressure on Juba by ratcheting up the sanctions. Robert Badri is the director of Badri and Associates, a right activist organization that helps victims of sexual violence across South Sudan with legal aid. He says external pressure is vital for peace to be achieved in South Sudan.
Without putting down the arms, without ceasing hostilities and violent propaganda, there would be no way for parties to implement or to move forward, for that matter. And this pressure from international community and from the Security Council is very, very fundamental.
Rich Malwal, a resident in Juba, agrees with Badri, citing the comprehensive peace agreement which led to the birth of an independent South Sudan in 2011. He says history has shown that international pressure has greatly contributed in ending conflicts and restores peace and stability.
The comprehensive peace agreement came into being because international actors, including the UN and the US, the United States of America, were putting pressure on Sudan government.
The UN Security Council has now given South Sudan's warring parties 30 days to either sign a peace agreement and end the conflict or face more sanctions. This comes after South Sudan warring parties last week failed to ink a peace deal in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, following close to 9 months of mediation by regional body IGAD.
Wake Simon Wudu reporting from Juba.
And on that story, a comment on the Facebook page, Isaac Voro says, worthless UN. And Wenso Bishop also saying he's listening live from Benue State in Nigeria.
And of course, you can join us, make the debate and keep it flowing on our Facebook page as usual, DW Africa.
Now, turning to Spain, where Mariano Rajoy has been ousted as the prime minister of the country after losing a no confidence motion in parliament. Rajoy admitted defeat just ahead of the vote and said it has been an honor to lead the country. He will be replaced by socialist leader Pedro Sanchez.
Now, Pedro Sanchez has been killed off a number of times in his political career, but now he has had the last laugh. The opposition socialists called for the vote after members of Rajoy's party were linked to a corruption scandal. In this report by Melanie Dabal, we will hear Sanchez himself outlining his plans.
Pedro Sanchez has achieved his goal of ousting his old foe Mariano Rajoy. The socialist opposition leader was a driving force in the campaign to oust him.
Are you ready to resign here today? Resign today and leave by your own will, and it will all end here.
It finally came to an end for Rajoy, and now Sanchez is set to become Spain's new prime minister. From economics professor to governing the country, Sanchez's journey to the top has been extraordinary. Twice he suffered humbling defeats in national elections while opposition leader in 2015 and 16. He was forced to resign after a bitter standoff with Rajoy's People's Party. Sanchez made a comeback in 2017, determined to challenge Rajoy over the major corruption scandal within his Conservative Party. His time in office is likely to be turbulent as he works through a new political landscape in Spain.
I am aware of the responsibility that I'm taking on during such a complex moment in the politics of our country. What I can say is that besides being aware, I'm going to tackle all the challenges that our country faces with humility and give it my all to modernize our country.
Now he says he'll lead differently with a socialist, equal, and Europe-friendly government.
Melinda Ball with that report.
And let's leave the Spanish politics and head back to Africa, where nearly 700 people in the Democratic Republic of Congo have received an experimental Ebola vaccine, according to the country's health ministry. This comes as the World Health Organization is rushing to contain an outbreak which has so far claimed 12 people.
And of course, Crispin, WHO says it is cautiously optimistic after the experimental vaccine showed positive results. And though some are checking the good news, critics remain wary. Eddie Mica Jr. with this report by Amin Asif.
Songs of jubilation at this hospital in Bikoro in the Democratic Republic of Congo after Ebola patient Wangui Nondi was released to go home. He seems to have recovered from the deadly virus after being injected with an experimental Ebola vaccine.
At first, I had a fever and headaches. Then, I stopped eating. I was weak. Finally, I received the treatment and I felt like my old self again.
For the first time in the history of the Ebola virus, health workers are hoping to beat the outbreak with a vaccine. Now, the DRC is rushing to distribute over 7,000 vaccines to areas where the virus has claimed a dozen lives in recent weeks. Raymond Chibanda, the DRC special envoy to the US, says there is reason to be optimistic.
And we believe that it is being done according to protocol, and this is going to help the world, because if really it can be proven that this is effective on a large scale, maybe we would be in our way toward controlling one epidemic that can do a lot of harm to humanity.
While the vaccine has brought hope to the DRC, its effectiveness has not been proven and it is officially unlicensed. Medical professionals such as Tarit Mukupade are hoping to learn from this large-scale test.
What we're trying to do now is to establish how effective is this vaccine. Do you need one dose or two doses to be protective? And once you've been injected or vaccinated with this, how long does that protection last for as well?
The World Health Organization is currently considering sending 5 additional UN-licensed Ebola drugs to the DRC. However, some health experts have criticized authorities of being too eager to approve the use of experimental drugs.
That report was by Emian Esif and presented by Eddie Mica Jr.
That's right, Isaac. Let's go back to our main story, which is the South Sudan and the threat of more sanctions by the United Nations Security Council. We have one comment on our Facebook page from Umar Ahmad Abubakar. He says, I support more sanctions on the South Sudanese leaders. It's time to bring an end to the crisis in the world's newest nation.
And of course, other listeners, you know, like someone from Benue State who says more sanctions are needed for South Sudan by the UN to prevent the war from escalating.
I don't know whether sanctions really work or not. I mean, we've seen that, for example, with North Korea.
Yeah.
Whether they've had sanctions for many years, but they have not really behaved until, you know.
Yeah. And observers, think, the solution to South Sudan, actually, like you mentioned, is not, the sanctions themselves, but more to engage civil society organizations, empower them to reach out to their people rather than these international organizations. Remember last week we covered a story about Oxfam itself calling for more, I think actually it called for these sanctions. I mean, because, it can't access, the people that need so much aid.
Exactly. And then another story on Congo, this Ebola vaccine. And very good news, some positive results there. But again, there are, cautious and there are a bit of critics who say maybe it was too soon to test these experimental drugs on people.
And we had a follower, one of our usual followers, Edwin Ehoza in Liberia. He wrote to us saying that, you know, this vaccine should be first tried on rodents like rats before they are tested on humans.
I'm sure they must have done that before they actually tried them on humans. But in any case, we hope for the best in DRC.
And many thanks for those comments. Keep the beat flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa. And in case you're just joining us, this is DW's Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Crispin Mwakide. Remember, we are also live on our DW Africa Facebook page.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, he is revered by Rastafarians around the world, especially Jamaicans. We will be hearing about none other than Ethiopia's Emperor Haile Selassie.
On this day, we look to the future calmly, in full faith and courageously. Today, we look to the vision not only of a free Africa, but also of a united Africa.
Stay tuned for that story. But now let's head to Sudan, where the African Union United Nations hybrid mission in Darfur, UNAMID, has urged warring parties to respect designated humanitarian areas. This comes after attacks on three internally displaced camps in central Darfur.
The latest violence deals a blow to a three-month ceasefire agreement between armed groups and government troops. The UN says nearly 300,000 people have been killed and 2.5 million displaced since the full conflict erupted in 2003. James Shimanyula reports.
Through a press release, the African Union United Nations hybrid mission in Darfur, UNAMID, said it expressed deep concern over the recent attacks on IDP camps in central Darfur. The attack claimed a number of fatalities among IDPs, the statement said. The UN decided to reduce the number of peacekeepers in Darfur last year, but made an exception for central Darfur state. That's because armed rebels there have refused to join a peace process or hold a ceasefire agreement signed in May. The ceasefire is holding in some parts of Darfur. Despite the setback in central Darfur, Jeremiah Mamabolo, African Union and United Nations Special Representative in Darfur, says there is light at the end of the tunnel.
From our interaction with people, they have indicated their desire to return to their places of origin as long as the provision of security and basic public services is guaranteed. Others are willing to settle where they are only if assured of their traditional land rights in their original homes.
In April, Mamabolo said UNAMID is considering an exit strategy as the Darfur conflict was winding down. However, UNAMID said it has now taken several measures in response to these recent attacks, including more frequent patrols in and around the affected camps. Meanwhile, Omar Dahab Fadel Mohamed, Sudan's permanent representative at the United Nations, called on all rebel groups to sign a political agreement with Khartoum so as to achieve lasting peace in Darfur.
We call upon all countries who have influence on the armed groups to pressure them to engage in negotiation without preconditions and to seriously participate so that we can reach a political agreement and contribute to reach a stable and secure Sudan.
The conflict in Darfur flared up in 2003 after non-Arab rebels of the Sudan Liberation Army SLA took up arms against the Khartoum government. The UN estimates that at least 300,000 people have been killed and 2.5 million displaced in Darfur. But the Sudanese government disputes these figures.
James Shimanyula reporting.
DW, African Roots.
And of course, every time you hear that opener, it's time for African Roots. Rich African history. Now, in 1923, Ethiopia became the first African nation to enter the family of the League of Nations. At a time when the continent was still in the firm grip of the European colonizers and relations were far from eye level, this was a sensation and an early success for a young regent called Rastafari Makonnen, later known as Emperor Haile Selassie. This is his story by Jackie Wilson and presented by Sonia Potier.
In 1922, Ethiopia's first regular printed newspaper was published. The country was moving ahead. Behind the program of cautious modernization was the man who, under the name of Haile Selassie, who remained at the helm of Ethiopian politics for half a century. The man himself was a paradox, a traditionalist monarch who laid the foundation for modern Ethiopia. Having enjoyed a thorough education, the young regent Rastafari, designated heir to the Ethiopian throne, was determined that his country should make its mark. While making sure the monarchy retained absolute power, he allowed cautious reform on many levels, economic, social, and political. Lij Asfar Rusen Asrit, a historian and himself a great nephew of the emperor, who now lives in Germany, recounts the fervor of those early years.
These were the visionary times of the young Rastafari Makonnen. Here he was the champion of all liberal-minded Ethiopians. He didn't only have friends at that time. There were many Ethiopian princes who didn't want that kind of westernization in Ethiopia.
But Rastafari kept his enemies at bay and with great pomp was crowned Emperor Haile Selassie in 1930. A year later, he had already introduced a new constitution which established a parliament, though with limited powers. However, the emperor's efforts at reform were cut short when Benito Mussolini's fascist Italy invaded the country in 1935. For Haile Selassie, this invasion, which sent him to exile, had an unexpected side effect. His memorable 1936 speech in Geneva to the League of Nations, appealing to support in ousting the occupiers, gained him a reputation as an international leader of substance and an anti-fascist. Lij Asfar Rusen describes how initially fascist journalists whistled and catcalled from the galleries of the public chamber and had to be thrown out. The emperor was unmoved, says Asfar Rusen.
He continued his speech, and one sentence that has rang in my ear all these years was, "The small match that has been lit in my country will engulf Europe as a great fire." These were indeed prophetic words.
In 1963, Haile Selassie presided over the formation of the Organization of African Unity, a development of huge moment for the continent.
On this day, we look to the future calmly, in full faith and courageously. Today, we look to the vision not only of a free Africa, but also of a united Africa.
However, at home, he was becoming increasingly autocratic and, ironically, he had himself set in motion the change that would lead to his downfall. Disenchantment with his monarchy had already prompted a coup attempt in 1960. It was a warning that the emperor gave no heed to. The oldest monarchy in the world ended in years of crisis. On September 12, 1974, Haile Selassie was deposed. He died under house arrest on August 27, 1975. He was 83.
Sonia Poitier with that report by Jackie Wilson. And African Roots is a project realized in cooperation with the Gerda Henkel Foundation.
And it's that time of the week when we give you another dose of sports. Now, Crispin, I was joined, you know, a little earlier before we came live on air by one of our own sports editors, Chuck Penford. And we talked about a couple of things about enthusiasm, you know, whether fans are really buying tickets to go to the World Cup. And of course, an exclusive interview that the Nigerian coach did with DW. Let's listen in first. And, you know, you tell me whether if I bought you a ticket for the World Cup and reserved everything, you would go there.
Before the last phase of ticket sales, they'd sold 1.7 million, which sounds pretty good. I think something like 55,000 Germans supposedly already have tickets. I get the impression there's a lot of people that will want to go to the World Cup just because of the World Cup and will ignore other things, human rights concerns, you know, all kinds of things have been going on with Russia. And Russia has done a lot to try to make it easier for people to travel to Russia for the World Cup, and also in terms of like transportation around the country and the cities and stuff like that. So I think a lot of people will still just go, and once the games are on, they'll just be there to enjoy the World Cup. There has been some concerns expressed about possible trouble with Russian hooligans. Mm-hmm. I don't think that will probably be the case, because while they sort of had a free rein in France, at least to some extent, a couple of years ago, in Russia, I think they've really got a handle on it. They really don't want any trouble there, because they're trying, like, you know, a lot of countries that host major sporting events, to put on a good face, especially to the West. So I don't expect any trouble there. So I tend to think this is the World Cup. Whether you like where it's being played, a lot of people are going to turn up.
Now, talking about the German team ahead of, you know, the tournament itself, with all the lingering questions about Manuel Neuer's fitness, and then recently we saw Draxler, you know, showing some kind of confidence in the presser. How prepared is it?
I think things are going along fine. I mean, we'll know a lot more after Saturday's game against Austria. That's the last chance for Joachim Löw to look at his team before he cuts it down to the 23-man squad that he needs to before Russia. That'll happen on Monday, I guess. All indications, as far as we can see, is that Manuel Neuer will be making the team. He'll play tomorrow night. And I think he'd almost have to pull himself out of the team or break a leg or something, God forbid. Yeah. Joachim Löw really wants him there.
Talking about Nigeria, Super Eagles, they just had some impressive results, especially the match against Argentina. They managed, you know, to walk out with 2-0. But its coach, Gennaro, in an interview with DW, he hinted about the importance of discipline. I mean, do you find this lacking among African teams when it comes to international tournaments?
Yeah, Gennaro Roy, this is not the first time he said this, and he's also got a fair bit of experience with African teams. I think he's been coaching African teams since about 2010, and Nigeria since 2016. What he has said, not just to us, but he said this before, and I think there's something to it, is that Africans play a very joyful soccer. I really like to watch it myself when I get a chance. A lot of creativity, a lot of offense, but yeah, maybe where they fall down sometimes is the tactical discipline.
Exactly.
What he was speaking about, though, you know, it's not maybe the way it was 30 years ago, because you also have a lot of these African players who have actually grown up in Europe and are playing in European leagues. So I think the problem, if you want to see it as such, is getting better, but that's probably what they've got to work on. It's sometimes in the past, maybe we've seen with Europeans that they've had the opposite problem. They've been tactically very disciplined and not very creative. So yeah. Everybody's looking for the perfect mix, and I think that's probably what he's been brought in by Nigeria to instill in them.
I was speaking to Chuck Penfold, sports editor at DW. Now, Crispin, are you warming up for the World Cup, or you will watch it from the comfort of your living room?
I'm very, 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 very eager to see the World Cup.
So you don't need a ticket I have for you here, you know, to go and watch
it? I think you can keep it to yourself.
Okay, thank you very much, Crispin. Well said. Now, as you heard, Nigeria's national football team coach Gen Roll told DW that the Super Eagles do not need a Nigerian Mo Salah to win the World Cup. He said the players need discipline, like being on time, Crispin, and not being too late to bed. Now, we asked you on our Facebook page, does going to bed early and winning the World Cup have anything in common? If yes, do African footballers lack discipline unlike their European counterparts?
Right, and Chinyere Ezeife says there are cases of indiscipline reported among few African players. Investigation revealed that some national team coaches demand bribes from their players for them to make the first team or regular call-up to national team. This is why some of them become arrogant and disrespectful to their coach.
And Marvin Chungu says it is true. There are some players who are naturally talented plus individual brilliance, and we fans look up to them for glory. But all in all, football should be teamwork.
Charles E. Cloud doesn't have very good words for the Super Eagles. He says they are a bunch of crabs after watching their game against DR Congo.
And one non-good comment, it depends. Charles Cloud says the Super Eagles are a bunch of crabs, but crabs are edible anyway, after watching their game against DR Congo. Maybe he wasn't so impressed by the results.
That's right. Anyway, let's move on to another story, Isaac. Still on Nigeria, though. We have this video that came out with this guy called Fowles, and the video is called This is Nigeria. Mm-hmm. It's a redone of This is America. And there have been comments coming in, like this one from Ibrahim Jalo Gambia, who says, I support the idea of the said musicians. Sometimes they have to go far enough so that the government will know the people are aware about the allegation of corruption and the security lapses in the country.
Every time we talk about corruption in Nigeria, I mean, we get floods and floods and number of comments, you know, coming in. And as FA says, I think this is one of putting pressure on the president and others to do something fast, because the problem facing Nigerians are becoming too much. Others should emulate him.
Right. And in the video, I mean, you can see the some of the challenges that Nigeria faces, like insecurity, like corruption, like you mentioned earlier on. So if you haven't watched the video, please go and watch This is Nigeria.
And of course, that does it. On behalf of the production crew with us in the studios, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideu.
Bye for now.